This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Hello. We're going to start today's episode with a mindfulness moment. Take a deep breath in, take a deep breath out. Also, let's start with a health and wellness check. Let me know on a scale from 1 to 10, just give yourself a number. Am I a 10? Am I feeling great? Am I a 1? Am I a hot mess? Do I need to run out of this building right now? Wherever you are, take another deep breath. And you are in a good place to listen to this episode. And now what I need you to do is put on your fireproof suit, because our guest today is hot. And I say that in the most respectful, professional way possible, that she just mouthed, thank you. That she is hot on events. She is hot on the mic, and she has got a gift of gab that rivals mine. So watch out, people. We are on fire today at Speaking of Events. And I knew that I instantly liked her the second I met her, and you will too, because it is my pleasure to introduce the on fire, never talking too fast, wonderful, energetic guest that is the head of events and experiences at Allspring Global Investments, Tina Shippers.
Oh, thank you, Carrie. You are so sweet. After this podcast, maybe we can talk about my online dating profile.
Absolutely. Yes, that is a side hustle of mine. Yes. And I am so excited.
Same.
In fact, later on today, we're going to announce our podcast about our combo podcast about online dating.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
No experience in that department. All right. Welcome, Tina, to events.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm so excited. I am a little nervous, but I'm excited too. So let's get this going.
That is a good place to be. We're going to jump right in. I'm going to ask you what I ask every other guest I have. And you know, because Tina said she listened to every episode, I think the only guest, except maybe like my second guest, Dean Harmontrout, who said, I've listened to all your episodes, because there was only one before Dean. So my question is, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
Absolutely. And I'm not going to lie, I've done a little prep, listening to the other podcasts and just having a think on it. But what I want people to know is that business development begins and ends with events. Events are catalysts for everything. Exactly. Mic drop. Change comes from events. Growth comes from events. Learning comes from events. Sales come from events, and so on. You can look at a customer journey or a sales funnel, and events consistently pop up along the way. I've always said this, that meaningful human connections are made at events, and that results in something good. Whatever that something is, it's something good. And you know, this is true not only in business, but in our personal lives as well. I don't think it's an earth-shattering concept. You may have heard it before. I'm stating the obvious, but I always like to emphasize the all-around importance of events. Even during a pandemic, we all quickly figured out a way to make large-scale events virtual, and not only make those possible, but meaningful and valuable to everyone who was listening in. And now in this post-COVID world, hybrid events will continue to be a mainstay because events are necessary. They're necessary to retain clients, to prospect new clients, to build brand awareness. I often say that by doing events, I get to work with every department at my company, as well as all of our clients. And that's a privilege. We're not only event planners, we're brand ambassadors. I joked earlier, we're almost matchmakers as well. This is because events touch everyone. They touch everything. And the way you differentiate yourself is by constantly evolving and innovating your event strategy to create those meaningful customer experiences.
Boom, double mic drop there. Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm on the same page. Yeah, absolutely. That the human connection is the thing. And did we figure it out when we were all forced to be virtual? Do you think we figured it out?
I think we did. During the pandemic, I was at the New York Stock Exchange. And so we went from doing 2,000 events pre-COVID a year, which was just bananas. And then we had to figure it out maybe quicker than most because the world didn't really stop for us. IPOs kept going. It was a record IPO year or two, and the opening and bell, closing bell still had to happen. So we figured it out. I think we all kind of worked together too. It was when colleagues and competitors were collaborators. So we all had to kind of figure it out together because there was only, the only way to move forward was to kind of be in it all together. And so vendors worked with other vendors to kind of figure it all out. And I think if anything, events are better for it. Hopefully we all can one day say that about COVID, but events are truly better off for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. People did come together. I remember collaborations that never would have happened had we all, not everything proverbially exploded.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
For lack of a better term.
We had to. That was another, you know, you look back and you think of the positives from it. And that was one thing. We all had to kind of work together in so many levels and doing events. I mean, we were absolutely not frontline. I'm not going to say we were frontline. I thank those who were. But at the exchange, we were back pretty quickly. And it was a record IPO season and we made it happen. And I was just lucky to be around such a great team to figure it out.
That's amazing. The adaptability was staggering and still is. And I find joy in seeing the things that are being pulled through that have stayed, that of why weren't we doing this before all the time? And because we didn't really think about it. We didn't stop to think about it. So yes,
absolutely.
To me, that's exciting.
We didn't know what we didn't know. And now that we know it, like, how can we keep going with it? I'm not at the exchange anymore, but I mean, I they've innovated and I've taken kind of what I learned there and hoping to bring it to Allspring, over the past year.
Yes. How long have you been at Allspring, the new ish venture?
Yes. Thank you for asking. I'm about to hit my 1-year anniversary.
Congrats.
Confetti. Yes. So Allspring spun out of a larger bank about a year and a half ago. So we are a startup at scale. It has been so fun to go from the exchange where I worked with startups to a startup. And I'm just lucky to work with Kelly Vives, our chief marketing and communications officer, who's constantly innovating and evolving and pushing me to kind of create more and supportive as best she can. It's been a fun year. Allspring, I don't know if many of your listeners will have heard of it, but hopefully they will hear more and more of it in the coming weeks and months ahead. Yes, they better now. Absolutely. But we're an asset management company. We've been around for about 18 months. Our slogan is elevating investing to be worth more. And we're really trying to differentiate ourselves, which has been so fun because events, as I said earlier, everything touches events, right? Like how do you get in front of clients or customers or employees? It's events. So we've actually been taking the whole elevating investing to be worth more literally. So we've done events at the top of locations. We did an event at Peak in New York City in Hudson Yards. We did an event at the Shard in London. So we're really taking that elevating literally, which has been fun and kind of unique for me as well. So thanks for asking.
You're very welcome. you've spent a fair amount of your career in events, correct?
Yes, without giving up my age, since we'll be doing the matchmaking later. Yes. It's been about 25 years. I know, which I look back and it blows me away. But it's a funny story, and I'll try and make it quick. But the way I talk about my event journey is that in college, I was a political science major. And my goal was to work at the White House. I mean, of course, who doesn't want to be? I didn't necessarily want to be president, but I wanted to be first lady. And so I was lucky enough to get an internship at the White House.
I think we can put that on your match.com.
Yes, absolutely, right? For sure. Thank you. I was lucky enough to get an internship at the White House in 1996. And I was placed in the office of the first lady and the office of scheduling in advance. And it was such a treat. And that was kind of my first time observing large scale, high end cultural events. And it was such a special time to be in DC, to be interning in general. And I loved that experience. And my goal at the time had been to then work on the Hill or something. And I changed my mind. I had too much student debt, needed to get like a job with a bigger paying salary. randomly went to work in investment banking of all things. I went from political science major to investment banking. I remember the first day of training, the trainer said, okay, this is a debit, this is a credit. And I was like, can you explain that one more time? And they thought, oh gosh, she's going to be in investment banking. Here she goes. But I did that for about 4 or 5 years at a small investment bank in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'll never forget this. My boss at the time, head of fixed income, came to me and said, listen, everyone loves you. You're great to work with. You're just not a number cruncher. Would you be interested in doing more events and marketing? And I was like, absolutely, let's go. So he helped me kind of create a role at the time, because we were a smaller investment bank. I could be kind of like a bigger fish in a smaller pond, which I was lucky to do. And I kind of created this event marketing role for our fixed income division at the time. And that was 20 plus years ago. And so my career has always kind of been event marketing for banking and financial services firms. And I've been lucky. I don't credit it to talent. I credit it to luck and the people around me. I've been lucky to do events at the highest levels. So like, I can talk great stories about the White House. I can talk great stories about working for the CEOs of these various banks and institutions. And it's been a fun ride. So, which was why I really enjoyed listening to all your podcasts, because there was such diversity in the folks you talked to and right. their career paths and what industries they work in. And events is a really cool business. And there's, you know, we're a diverse business. And I'm glad this podcast is out there, because I have nothing but positive to say about what we do. We're not just party planners. That's fun too, but we're way more. We're marketers, we're business development, we're connectors.
Absolutely. And speaking of, as you know, that we have a diverse, we have a global audience here on Speaking of Events. So can we just fill in the blanks for maybe the one or two few who may not know who the first lady was in 1996? Because I think they're going to know who it is when you say their name.
Anyway. Yes, absolutely. It was Hillary Rodham Clinton. Yes, was the first lady in the Clinton administration, 1996. It was an election year. It was such a fun time to be at the White House. And I was non-political at the time. I truly wasn't there because of a party or anything like that. I was a college senior studying politics. And it was such a fascinating time to be there. And I'll never forget state dinners that summer, arrival ceremonies on the South Lawn. I mean, you have to pinch yourself. Like, I will say some days when I'm doing like corporate events, I'm like, well, the White House would have done it differently. And then I have to like snap myself and be like, yes, but Tina, this isn't the White House. So move on.
Yes. So you tell people, oh, I worked on with Hillary Rodham Clinton. It's 1996. It's the election year. What's typically the first question you get asked?
Well, I'm like, I'm sure you can imagine what people kind of go to around that time. If you go back in like history,
yes,
and whatnot.
So that's what, but,
yes, for sure.
To.
Yeah. When you, I will say, you know, whenever I'm in a job interview or someone's looking at my LinkedIn, they jump right. They'll skip like, you know, 20 years of work and go right to my White
Here's
House internship.
Years of your,
yeah.
Right.
And I want to know, like, tell me all about it. And again, it was such a fascinating experience. Did I work with Secretary Clinton directly? No, I worked with her staff. And many of those staffers are still in government, which is amazing. And they've continued to kind of do so much. So yeah, I mean, the experience of just working with her and observing her directly was amazing. I didn't know what was currently kind of going on in current affairs. So I can't really even really speak to that. Of course, I used to make my jokes about just being a White House intern, but I was lucky enough to kind of observe it firsthand. So interns, in the summer, the White House runs on interns and volunteers. So we were at like the center of action, and it had just been, if you look back, obviously everyone knows it happened, but interns were a big part of, the government had shut down the winter before I interned, and essentially the White House was running on interns, and we kind of kept that going. So we were, you're doing administrative stuff, but you're also like getting involved with events, with briefing packs, with talking points, with all of that. So it was just really fascinating. Also, side note, fun time to be in DC. You know, you're 21 years old, living in the district, happy houring with the Capitol Hill interns and playing softball on the weekends and touring all the museums. Just, I encourage anyone, just get involved. It was a really wonderful experience. And I know that they still have the internship program.
You did just age yourself. So if you want us to bleep it out for your dating profile later, let me know.
Okay.
And also.
Yes, you're right. I forgot about that.
All right. Thank you. This was so exciting.
I danced a little there, but hopefully I danced well enough to not go into all the talk of the internship.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's good. It was perfect. Spot on. All right. I do want to switch gears to my party platform, which is speakers, as you know, I love speakers. We love prepping all the speakers at my company. And I want to know, and actually I already know, would you share, please, a speaker disaster story or seven or whatever you've got for us? I would love it, please.
Absolutely. And again, I've listened to all your podcasts. So I was like comparing my stories with theirs. You know, and everyone has that story of like the speaker not showing up or showing up late, not being prepared, giving one word answers.
Or drunk, apparently. That's a very popular one.
Or like the planner having to fill in for the speaker, which thankfully has never happened to me. And unfortunately, you know, that comes with the territory, and you just have to try and do as much pre-event coordination as possible. But ultimately, you have to be ready to deal with it. So my story is actually a sad one, but I share it because it's a testimony to the amazing team I worked with at the time. So this was about 8 years ago. I was working at a top-tier investment bank in New York City, and we were hosting our annual board summit for about 200 C-suite clients. And the format of the event was cocktails and dinner with a very high-level speaker the night before a full day of business sessions. So over dinner that night, our vice chairman, who was a legendary Wall Street icon and innovator, was going to interview General Stanley McChrystal, who is truly one of my favorite speakers, such a kind man, such an incredible patriot. And so my teammates and I were in our staff office during the day preparing for the dinner that night, which was going to take place in our private meeting space in our headquarters in New York, kind of overlooking all of Manhattan, beautiful space. And we were sitting there going through dinner seatings, table seatings, which, as you can imagine, can truly be the most difficult part of any event. It's the most complex, whether it's like a CEO dinner or a wedding, table seatings are truly sometimes the most difficult to work through. So we're going through our table seatings, and all of a sudden, one of my colleagues from the communications team walks in to the conference room, pulls me aside, which was unusual. He didn't have anything to do with the event. And so I knew something was up, but I had no idea what. And he proceeds to tell me that our vice chairman had passed away suddenly that morning, like a couple hours earlier. And I'll never forget it. I get goosebumps thinking about it. I was in shock. I definitely asked him to repeat himself a few times. And my immediate thoughts were of our vice chairman's family, of course. He was a husband, a father. He was a new grandfather. He meant so much to our firm. And then I thought about my boss, our head of events, who was really close with him. And my heart broke. I was in shock. And my colleague from communications kind of snapped me out of it and was like, okay, Tina, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen with your event. I'll keep you posted, but I wanted you to be the first to know. So I'll circle back with you. Okay. So at that point, I go back into the staff office, and I think my teammates had been watching and they saw my expression. They were already online, like Googling the news. And I'll never forget how immediate that was. Like they already saw like his life in words online. It was chilling. And we gave ourselves some time to grieve, of course, shared a couple hugs. And then it was like, okay, we've got to pivot. And I look back and I think that the fact that we had work to do helped us get through the day. But ultimately, we were like robots, just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for the executives and the leadership team around me who kind of helped us get all through it. Our CEO, truly one of the best, if not the best on Wall Street, decided to move forward with the event. And right before dinner, he somehow gave opening remarks at the beginning, which could not have been easy for him because he was very close with our vice chairman. And he paid a lovely tribute to our vice chairman. And then he encouraged us to move ahead with the dinner as our vice chairman would have wanted. So as a staff, you're kind of going through the motions and trying to do what's right and trying to honor our vice chairman, but also make sure the clients are happy and things are moving. And I'll never forget, we kind of all went back to this quote that our late vice chairman always used to say, and that was, life moves in one direction, forward. So we must as well. I say that time and time again. I bet my colleagues, if they listen to this podcast, will say, gosh, she says that all the time. But in the spirit of moving forward, we were able to get Melissa Francis from CNBC to do the interview that night with General McChrystal. She's a total pro, of course, didn't need much prep. The interview went well. We were all thankful that things kind of moved on. You know, my colleagues and the bankers around me, we were crestfallen and hurting, but our clients there, they didn't have that connection. And so they were there to be at an event and to network and learn. And that was still their goal. So we had to make sure we got through that as well. You know, the tragedy going on didn't touch them directly. So we had to make sure that their experience was meaningful as well. And, you know, goodness, deep breath. I don't tell the story often because it's a touchy one to tell. And I know I went on long, so apologies. But again, it's a tribute to the colleagues who I worked with and those folks in communications, marketing, and events who kind of picked up the pieces and you know, made it all work out. So total champs.
Thank you for sharing that. Very different than what we've heard. And truly a speaker disaster. The speaker passed away. Yeah. This is an event triumph story of, I mean, really a testament to the work ethic, to teamwork, to drive, to all the stuff that I think is inherent to anybody in this space. So I would say thank you for sharing and congratulations on the triumph of overcoming that
yeah
life event. It's in yes and to his credit.
Thank you. I will use that again, an event triumph, and our vice chairman would appreciate that because legendary Wall Street icon, like brought so many companies public, did so many mergers and acquisitions, just total innovator. But also he believed in events and he was a champion of events, and he, you know, literally did CEO events that no other firm was doing at the time, and other firms continue to try and replicate to this day. He was the only vice chairman I knew who would join our weekly event planning calls for our, you know, annual CEO events that we were doing. Most execs at that level don't, but he was a true champion. And then the bankers around him learned that too. Like events, like I said earlier, events ring the register, which is an old term. And I sometimes have to explain that to my younger colleagues. It means you ring the cash register, make the money. But events really do.
I knew what it meant. Thank you.
But events, you know, bring it home. And again, total tribute, triumph, all of that. Thank you for letting me share.
Oh, you're welcome. Ooh. So you're in the financial space. You've been in the financial space for a while. And what challenges do you think the financial space faces that other industries don't, and in obviously in terms of events, in terms of our world.
Definitely. Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. You know, first and foremost is market conditions. And, you know, we're currently in kind of a trying market condition time right now. I'm not going to predict where it's going to go or not go. I'm certainly not an economist. But doing event marketing for a financial services firm, you have to go with the ups and downs of where it's at. And you want to be, agile and able to pivot quickly, because whether it's a pandemic or market turn, or, you know, major bankruptcy, whatever it might be, you have to make sure that you're planning for events that are still going to be meaningful, but not tone deaf, that you're inviting the right people, that you're not spending too much during a downturn, all of that. So I think being a financial services event planner, you have to be cognizant of market conditions. I worked at Lehman Brothers, so again, dating myself, but I'll never forget. We had a huge events team, events and roadshow teams. I mean, we're talking like maybe all in the roadshow teams and the events team were like 50 planners. And, you know, a majority of that team didn't survive the bankruptcy, me and my boss being one of them. And so what did I learn from that? You kind of have to just build your network, know your vendors, know your other planners. You're an event planner, but you're also like, you need to be cognizant of what's going on in the world around you, market condition wise, current affairs, all of that. Event marketing in financial services is a small world, which I'm thankful for. And then event marketing in financial services in New York City is even smaller. And we all kind of know each other, which is wonderful because you can rely on that network. And you know, tag each other in when you need it, which was important during the pandemic, which was important during financial downturns, all of that. So again, maybe it was a roundabout way of answering your question. It's probably just market conditions. But another thing that my industry faces, and I imagine others do as well, although I'm not an expert, maybe healthcare sees this, but it's a saturated market. Like there's so many events taking place every day. And how do you differentiate yourself when it's so saturated? Everyone's doing events, which helps when you do know planners at various banks and you can call and say, what are you doing? When are you doing it? Okay, let's make sure we don't do it the same day. But it's very saturated. So you're constantly differentiating and figuring out truly how to get people to attend, whether in person or virtual. And these days with virtual events, you've probably heard this theme, it's harder to get people to come because they can do it virtually. So why go in person when I can do it virtually, when I don't have to jump on a train or pay for a hotel? And so you really have to figure out ways to motivate people to come in person.
Yep, absolutely. Your point about not being tone deaf is something that we face, and especially as we're prepping speakers, particularly in the financial field, is how to be nimble, how to be prepared and nimble enough that in that moment, how do we deliver this same message with engagement, with enthusiasm, and keep the tone, be cognizant of the tone and put it into context of that day, because right, Mark, the market does this.
Oh, completely.
I'm doing an up and down sign. If you guys see that, everybody's not watching, right? Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, the key thing in my depth of experience to get people to an event is obviously bacon and chocolate.
Oh, for sure. Yes. And when they're together, even better. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Just, I mean, that's a free tip, Tina. Just take it.
Does it work for dating? Just kidding.
Yes. And we're putting that on the profile as well. Great. I've already got a bunch of things. Hey, White House intern, professional White House intern, bacon and chocolate lover. Okay. That's bad. All right. What? Okay. 25 years. Although we don't know how old you are, 25 years in the industry, what is the craziest thing that's ever happened at the stock exchange?
Oh, gosh. And I'm not the one to tell it, because those would have been the early 2000s. And I was only there, you know, I was there for about five wonderful years. And it was exciting. But I have a wonderful friend and former colleague, Beth Oporto, who ran marketing there for 20 plus years. And she did it all. She brought a lion onto the trading floor. She did all the crazy IPO celebrations of the early 2000s. It's still amazing. And they do so many wonderful things. And you meet so many great people at the exchange. But the craziest thing, I mean, I just look back, the IPOs were the most fun, because you're truly watching someone's like life journey in that moment. It's they're taking their company public. So it's his or her wedding, bar mitzvah, sweet 16, high school graduation, you know, company announcement, all in one. And as the event planner, you're like, okay, how am I going to make this magical and the next one magical? So you're just trying to do all sorts of crazy fun things. Which was tough, I will say, during COVID, because, you know, we went from you could have 400 people on the trading floor to you could have maybe eight. And so we had to be creative with smaller numbers. But it's a wonderful place, 11 Wall Street. I have wonderful memories there. And yeah, you'll have to have Beth Oporto on your podcast. She can tell you the wild stories of like bringing, you know, Motley Crue on the floor and the lion, which everyone talks about, and just the crazy things that they did down at the exchange.
Oh, I would love that. She is always welcome. All right. So since All Spring Global Investments, where the theme, your mantra is, or motto rather, is that we're elevating investing to be worth more. So it's a year from now. And how have you elevated, invested to be worth more? Where are you in a year? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I hope our brand continues to just grow in market, and people know Allspring like they know BlackRock or Wellington or Fidelity. So that's a big goal. You know, we spun out of a much larger company, and we have, you know, 500 billion or so assets under management. So again, we're a startup at scale, but even my family sometimes says, where do you work again? Allspring Global Investments, Allspring. So we're elevating investing to be worth more. What does that mean? We're really trying to be a differentiator and a disruptor. You hear disruption all the time, not necessarily in financial services, specifically not in asset management. So we're trying to, you know, highlight our thoughtful approach to sustainable investing, which everyone's trying to do. Sustainable investing is important. We're trying to do it differently. And if you, you know, listen to our PMs and look at our All View product, you'll see exactly what we're trying to do. Another big thing that we focus on is the blend of EQ and IQ, which is the humanizing of asset managers in general. My dad literally the other day said to me, so what does an asset manager do? And I, you know, wanted to sit him down and like show him the bullets of everything we do. But ultimately I was like, we're trying to help funds make more money to help personal investors do better. Like, we're just trying to advance positivity. And AllSpring, again, is trying to do it through sustainable investing, through diversity initiatives. Our CEO, Joe Sullivan, legendary asset manager, was at Legg Mason for a long time. He likes to say that AllSpring, to him and hopefully to all of us, is their career gift. So it's a gift to build this differentiated business and a brand for the ages. And that's a big quest, right? So that's not going to happen in 6 months, 12 months, but it's our 1-2 year goal to kind of get there. And it's fun to be kind of on the ground helping build it. So Kelly Vives, our Chief Marketing Communications Officer, she's allowing us to kind of differentiate and create. We're also, to the point earlier, making sure we're not tone deaf. We're being very, agile and watching market conditions and making sure that we're kind of operating as we should and not overspending or not spending enough, and differentiating to our clients, to the market, to our competitors. So we'll see where it goes, but it's an exciting time. I work with some great people. I'm happy to be here. We'll chat in a year. We'll chat in a year about this and the dating one too.
That was my next question, and I'll just table that for now. Okay. All right. Woo! How you feeling? You good? You're taking a sip.
What are you drinking? I'm feeling good. Taking a sip. I'm drinking iced tea. And I told you this earlier, but my boss, Kelly, I just mentioned, she told me to talk slow. I'm a Long Islander, so I tend to be loud and fast. So I'm just trying to keep it slow.
You are welcome here. I love it. All right. I actually now need you to talk fast because Tina Shippers, are going to get into our Lightning Express round.
Okay, here we go.
Ready?
Oof. Yes.
Okay. Being that you've heard every episode, you've heard a lot of these questions, so they're not going to be quite as off the cuff for some people, but I'll get you with a few maybe. All right. So you've got 45 seconds on the clock. There's no clock. And I'm going to ask you seven seconds. I'm going to ask you seven questions and we're going to get through them in 7 seconds. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Tina Shippers, what is your favorite moment in the event process?
Honestly, the end of it, when you're just wrapping it all up and kind of high-fiving your colleagues and saying this worked well. Congrats to us all.
Who do you consider your mentor?
I was asked this recently. I'm not being fast, but I was asked this for work. And I said, my mother and Secretary Clinton, both. I didn't work that closely with Secretary Clinton. I said that earlier, but she's just a mentor from afar. An inspiration that I look towards. But my mom is my day-to-day mentor. She's taught me everything.
Love it. Love it. What does it smell like on the floor of the stock exchange?
It depends on the day.
It depends if the tiger is there or Motley Crue is there, right?
I'm going to say, bless them. It's going to be hot sauce in the morning on their sandwiches and then coffee in the afternoon.
Okay. That was a personal question.
For it.
What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Well, I have a fully stocked wine cabinet, so that's part of it, but just time with friends. I probably need to do more. As I sit here, I'm touching my Peloton, my COVID purchase Peloton, which needs to be used more. I'm going to say time with friends.
Love it. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
What would I be doing? Our weekly team call, which I had to reschedule.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry. Thanks. Sorry, colleagues.
Thanks. We won't tell them. It's okay. Question six. What don't we know about Hillary Clinton?
She remembers everyone's birthdays, famous for it. She'll email her staff or send them a note. Everyone's birthdays, famous for it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She's great like that. I can go on for hours, but just that might be something people don't know.
That I did not know. That's exciting. Yeah. Thank you. What is the best way to take care of an event professional?
That's a great one. I'm going to take a second on that. And I'm actually as I'm answering that, I'm thinking of all the podcasts I've listened to. And there was one person who said with events, what do you want people to know about events? It's that it starts with a person. So what do I want them to know about events is that, again, we're people and we're colleagues and we're here to help you. I'm not doing an event for myself. I'm doing an event for you, whether you're a family member or a colleague or a client, I'm here for you. So, we're in it together. Remember that. I don't work for you. I work with you.
Oh, that is the third mic drop, the 30th mic drop moment of this. I'm out of mics for this podcast. We have to end and say.
Oh, I want to keep going.
I know we can. We absolutely can. And for everybody else, though, where, if they want to find you and connect with you, where can they find you?
Oh, absolutely. LinkedIn. Please connect with me on LinkedIn. I have, since my Lehman Brothers days, have been on LinkedIn like a fanatic. So I use that. I think it's a great platform. I love it when event people connect with me or even vendors. It's how I've found some good friends and some great business partners.
How I found you.
Oh yeah, exactly. And we're forever connected. We're forever connected, Carrie.
We're forever connected. And maybe later when we launch LinkedIn dating, we're gonna leverage it that way as well. Well, we covered a lot. I really liked it. Thank you. I knew this would be high energy and chock full of amazing things. And you did not, this was not a disappointment at all. So thank you. Thank you,
awesome.
Tina
Thank you.
Shippers, AllSpring Global Investments. It's gonna be a household name.
Yes, everyone's
soon.
Gonna know it. Yep. Thank you. Thank Elevating you. Investing to be worth more. Mike.
That's right. Woo! Yes. We're out of mic, so
we're
stop
mics.
Dropping them.
All fine.
Okay. And thank you again for being here. Thank you to our audience. If you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast, please give us 5 stars. Tina Shippers deserves 15 million stars. Give it to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you again. And we hope to see you. I hope you'll listen to me again.
For sure.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, everyone. And remember, whatever you speak about, keep speaking of events. Mic drop.
Speaking of events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovations.